We'll hear argument next in number 20-2245, Alphatec Holdings, Inc. versus Nuvasiv, Inc. Ms. Wilhelmus Kara.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'd like to focus today on three issues. First, the application of collateral estoppel to Claim 18 of the 334 patent, and obviousness of using four markers in Claim 16 of the 334 patent, and finally, the construction of longitudinal length in the 156 patent. I'd like to start first with Claim 18. In Nuvasiv 1...
I'm having a very difficult time understanding what's going on here. I've read the briefs a couple of times, and the petition and the board's decision. It seems to me that your position now is that the earlier decision established that claim one was obvious, and that claim 18 was patentable distinct from claim one. But I'm not sure that you made that argument to the board in your petition. You seem there to be saying that the collateral estoppel was not the invalidity of claim one so much as it was that the dimensional limitation was satisfied. And could you help me on that? And in that connection, I must say I don't understand the argument is to putting aside collateral estoppel, why there's a problem with combining these two references.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The explanation seems to me not to be directed to the claim language. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. So we did raise the issue in our petition that Claim 18 was not patently distinct from Claim 1. We expressly relied for Claim 18 on a combination of Michelson and Fry, further in view of Berry, for the purpose of showing that a person of ordinary skill in the art would know the human anatomy. In connection with Claim 18, we expressly relied on this court's holding in Nuvasiv 1 that the combination of Fry and Michelson would have been obvious. In Nuvasiv 1, this court stated that the only limitation in the 334 patent that addressed comparing the length to the width.
I'm sorry. Let me try to accelerate the conversation here. My concern here is with the petition and the petition theory for Claim 18. And as you know, the petitioner is the architect for the conception of how to challenge and attack the validity of a patent claim. And when I read your petition at A274 to 276, it introduces the idea that yes, Frey and Michelson rendered Claim 1 obvious in light of Nuvasiv 1. But then almost immediately, you step away from that starting premise and start talking about a rationale for why one would combine teachings of Michelson with Frey. And then you introduced a theory that you would want a narrower implant in Frey so that you could introduce individual narrower pieces into the patient one at a time and then ultimately install a completed implant inside the patient after combining all the narrower pieces. And as you know, the board went at great length in its decision to explain why that was a complete misunderstanding of Michelson. And my understanding now is in your briefing, you're not at all disputing that finding by the board, but you are now here at the Federal Circuit raising a different theory, which is really rooted in collateral estoppel. And I'm concerned that you did not raise that. You had the choice in your petition to do with Claim 18 exactly what you did with Claim 6 and 9, which was to use collateral estoppel of claim one as the launch point, and then just explain why the references teach, you know, the medial support or the second aperture and things like that. And then that would be the end of it. But for Claim 18, the structure of your argument looks strikingly different. Basically, you hit the restart button and start it all over again with from the foundation of trying to justify why a skilled artisan would combine Michelson and Fry. And so, number one, I do not understand why, when you had the choice to put, you know, to use a football analogy, you had the choice to put the ball on the 1-yard line, but instead you chose to put it back on your own 20-yard line and start from scratch. So that's my concern about your argument as to Claim 18 in your blue brief. It's a theory you could have really developed and raised and forced the board to confront, but I see a completely different argument that you made, and the board thoroughly addressed it. And now I'm afraid it's too late to go back to this collateral estoppel theory. And so I'd be happy to hear your response to all of this.
Thank you, Your Honor. So we expressly raised this court's opinion in Evasive One as the motivation to combine Fry and Michelson in our petition. That's at Appendix 263.
Okay, but that's a different question. I mean, I have the same concerns as Judge Chen, except with one tweak. I understand that in the petition you relied on the original decision as establishing that Michelson showed the dimensional limitations, but then in other respects you start from scratch. In other words, you limit the collateral estoppel argument to that one feature of it, rather than saying, okay, Claim 1 is invalid, and now we only need to look at the additional language in Claim 18.
So our petition did expressly focus on the additional language of Claim 18. In the petition, we specified that we were relying on collateral estoppel for all of the limitations of Claim 1, and that we would further focus on our discussion on the additional limitations of Claim 18. We said that at Appendix 266. What we focused on, so we started with the same teachings that the Federal Circuit relied on for finding all the limitations of Claim 1. So to be clear, Your Honor, the board found that Claim 18, board upheld Claim 18 entirely on a limitation found in Claim 1, the long and narrow limitation, which we extensively discussed in our petition, was previously decided in Evasive 1. What we were doing for the additional dimensional limitations of Claim 18 was relying
But that's where the confusion arises. I mean, yes, you certainly relied on collateral estoppel for the dimensional limit for a answer to the dimensional limitations. The question is, what about other limitations that need to be satisfied by the combination of Michelson and Fry?
We did discuss those additional limitations that need to be satisfied by the combination of Michelson and Fry in view of Berry for Claim 18. We expressly discussed the Claim 18 adds particular dimensional limitations. It requires a width of 18 millimeters and at least a length of 45. Our petition focused on those additional limitations. The board's decision, however, did not reach any of our evidence on the additional limitations of Claim 18, because it focused entirely on whether Michelson taught a single long and narrow.
Can you tell us why you went through the full-blown motivation to combine Michelson and Fray at 274, 275, and then also at 263, 264? I'm not talking about the motivation to combine Berry. I understand you had to do that. I'm just asking about why you were arguing to the board all of this about the motivation to combine Fray and Michelson based on, I think, what we would all now acknowledge is a misreading of Michelson.
So we focused on restating what the motivation to combine was of Michelson and Fry, because we then had to take the next step of making that combination of the long and narrow as taught by Michelson and Fry with Berry.
How about your reply? What did you say in your reply? Did your reply say, well, the patent owner is in its response is saying all of this discussion about why we're misreading Michelson, but it doesn't even matter because we're actually relying in addition on collateral estoppel. And so we don't even need to justify an explanation for combining Michelson and Frye. Did your reply say anything like that?
Our reply expressly addressed the collateral estoppel issue, and we even further addressed
what page is that at? What page is the appendix?
I don't think a full reply.
I don't think it's in the JA.
I think
you have maybe a couple pages to your reply, and none of it has anything to do with Claim 18, as I understand it.
Yes, I don't think we have a full reply in the joint appendix. This was also expressly raised at the oral argument. At the oral argument, I stated to the panel, this issue has already been decided of combining Michelson and Frye. That issue has already been decided. And the board's decision was directly contrary not only to this court's opinion, but to the express description in Michelson that figure 19 is a plurality of spinal implants. Our argument was independent of whether you assemble the implants before or after insertion. Michelson says that figure 19 is a combination of spinal implants. When the board, when NuVasive raised this issue in its response, we addressed that issue in reply by focusing on, again, what the exact same portions of Michelson that this court relied on in NuVasive 1.
If there is something in the reply that is not in the JA, that expressly talks about what happened in NuVasive 1, in which you, the petitioner, don't even need to do a justification for combining Michelson and Frey, because those two references have already been deemed to have a motivation to combine their teachings. That would be useful to see in the letter today. But right now, based on what I see in the JA, to be honest, in my view, I don't see any argument like that in either your petition or your reply. If you argued it the oral argument, maybe that's too late. I don't know, in front of the board. We certainly don't have the transcript of the board hearing in the JA either. But right now, are you disputing the board's very lengthy summary of what all the arguments were presented? As you can see, this inside this board's decision, this was clearly the main event to the board, and they discussed this issue of Claim 18 at length, summarizing in seemingly exhaustive detail what each party was arguing in their petition, the reply, the response, the sir reply, the other side sir reply. And there's nothing in any of that summary that suggests that you raised the argument below, the argument that you're raising now on appeal.
I think that the board's decision does reflect that we raised the argument below, because the board in fact applied collateral estoppel for claim 1 to claims 6 through 9.
That's right, because when we look at your petition, we can see very clearly that you did use this powerful tool of collateral estoppel in making your case for claims 6, 7, 8, and 9 in a way that, again, as I said before, for claim 18, there was a strikingly different approach for whatever reason.
I can find those pages of the reply for you.
What about appendix 266?
That is the page in the very page in the petition that I referred to earlier, Your Honor. Thank you. That is where we expressly stated in the petition that we were relying on collateral estoppel for claim 18, and that would be based on claim 1. So we raised this from the very beginning in the petition. When the arguments were raised on reply, we referenced back to it, but we also addressed the substance of the arguments that were raised. And in doing so, we relied again on NuVasive 1 and the teachings in NuVasive 1.
So I guess in your view, the board was on notice of this theory of attacking Claim 18, and they just missed the boat. They should have addressed this. They didn't. They addressed something else that you argued at great length, but they failed in their responsibility to confront this one issue that they were on notice of.
They did, Your Honor, and I think this is clear when you look at the board's decision. When the board summarizes before it gets to Claim 18, the prior record, and it specifically states that in Nuvasiv 1, there were certain arguments that Nuvasiv had raised, but the Federal Circuit had noted that it wasn't the board was not at fault for not addressing those arguments at that time because Nuvasiv had not raised them. I think there was some confusion then that Nuvasiv was permitted to re-raise them now. But the issue is the board was bound to follow this court's precedent, and collateral estoppel applies. And we extensively argued collateral estoppel, and we did so for not just Claim 6 through 9, for Claim 18 as well. We extensively argued that.
We argued it at the oral hearing, you mean? Where?
No, we argued it extensively. We argued it in our petition. We argued collateral estoppel applies extensively in our reply brief.
Okay. I think it would be helpful for us to see that. Is that available on PACE or whatever?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. I think we're out of time unless my colleagues have further questions here. We'll give you some rebuttal time. We'll figure that out when the time comes. Mr. Rosato?
Thank you, Your Honor. And, you know, I guess I'll start by saying I think the court's recognizing this, but for many of the issues that are raised on appeal, the board did provide a very extensive, detailed analysis of the prior, and the board rejected ALFTEC's challenges largely on the basis that the cited prior simply didn't say what ALFTEC claimed it did. And that's certainly true for Claim 18. We didn't get to the marker configuration issue, but that's true there. That really had nothing to do with it, but really was an interpretation of the shelf reference.
Well, you heard our concern about whether this collateral estoppel issue was raised in the petition and the reply. And so what about page 266 and then later the discussion of the claim language of Claim 18? Why isn't that sufficient?
So I don't think that that was their argument, that they were pushing hard a collateral estoppel-based argument. And the reason I don't think
they don't have to press it hard. They just have to press it.
Or pressing it.
There's no question. There's no question here. There's all sorts of other stuff is directed to issues that aren't before us now. The question is whether the petition sufficiently raised the collateral estoppel argument that they're pushing now. And I'm asking you particularly about page 266 and some of the later pages.
Right. I think that really focuses on what's become what the defendant claims. But I can tell you why I believe they took on this extensive argument for a rationale about Michelson. And I think the reason they did that is
that's not the question. The question is, did they raise the collateral estoppel argument in the petition and elaborated in the reply sufficient so that the board should have addressed it?
Not in the way that they're trying to use it here. Okay. I think they certainly mentioned collateral estoppel, but when it came to Claim 18, the problem they had is that Nuvasiv 1 addressed Claim 18. Board addressed Claim 18 in view of Michelson, and the board found that Michelson and Fry don't give you Claim 18. The board addressed that specifically. It's even noted in the decisions here. The board
ALFTEC wasn't stopped by that conclusion because in Nuvasiv 1, the petitioner there, Medtronic, had dropped out on appeal. So there wasn't, in fact, even an appeal on Claim 18 in that case, right? I mean, I agree with you. The patent board concluded that Medtronic, for whatever reason, fell down in its burden of trying to prove Claim 18 unpatentable, but that doesn't mean that ALFTEC was somehow bound by that.
I think the decision went beyond that, and I'm not suggesting.
Well, okay, let's put this to the side about what happened on claim 18 in NuVasive 1. What could you get back to Judge Dyke's point, which is that at A266, the petition makes a case for why collateral estoppel should apply as to claim 1. And then at A274, when it begins its discussion of claim 18, in the very first sentence, it invokes the collateral estoppel argument that it presented at A266. And so, again, following up on Judge Dyke's point, maybe one way of reading the petition is that they use collateral estoppel, and then in addition or in the alternative, they also do an independent explanation of why one would combine Frey and Michelson. And so really all that's needed is just collateral estoppel plus the Berry reference, the tertiary reference.
I don't think that would work, but I also don't think that if they're now pointing to NuVasive 1 and saying this saves the day for us, I don't think we can put NuVasive 1 aside in its entirety. And in NuVasive 1, as the board explained here, the board looked at Frey and Michelson and made the determination. It wasn't just Medtronic failure. They looked at Michelson and said it doesn't give us a 40-millimeter long, 18-millimeter wide implant. We find no rational basis to get there. Right. So in the same
just accept the idea that we decide this issue about claim 18 in the earlier NuVasive decision. Just accept that for a moment. Do you agree that in the petition and elaborated in the reply that they raised the collateral estoppel point, saying that the invalidity of claim 1 establishes that all of those arguments about claim 1 have been resolved, and that we only need to be concerned about the additional language of claim 18. Do you agree that they raised that issue?
I don't agree that they raised it in the way they're trying to use it. I agree that they said we can't revisit claim 1, and I would actually agree with that on a point of law. We're not trying to recapture.
Well, and then they go on to say, so the only question is about the additional language of claim 18.
And when it gets to that additional language, they acknowledge that nobody ever had a rationale to get to 18 millimeters, and that's addressed in NuVasive 1.
But that's not an issue that the board has addressed yet.
In NuVasive 1, they did address that. They addressed it directly and said, we don't find a rationale to get to 18 millimeters.
We're asking you to forget about that.
Yeah.
If the collateral estoppel issue in the petition, the board should have said something about it, and it didn't.
I think the board understood their argument as providing their own new rationale based on the sequential insertion of pieces that they alleged was in Michelson and wasn't. I think the board understood that was their argument.
They never disputed
that. That was their argument.
Mr. Rosato, did the petitioner in their, do you have their reply in front of you by any chance?
I don't, Your Honor. It's not in the appendix. I can try to put it up. But
okay.
I mean, even if they raise this in the reply, we all know that that's not sufficient. They can't come up with a brand new theory at the reply stage, and they didn't. Unless there are any further questions on claim 18.
I think you can go on to your cross appeal if you want.
Yeah, I want to get to the cross appeal, and I'm sure I'll draw some questions on that. But our main problem is this with the finding on cross appeal, and that is it's the application of collateral estoppel in this instance in the way Alphatec argued for the application the way the board applied. The problem is Alphatec didn't address the limitations of claim 1 that were imported into the dependent claim. It urged those to be ignored and then urged obviousness if the dependent claim limitations, the additional limitations, could be found. The problem with what they were presenting is that ignoring the limitations of claim one that was imported into the dependent claims, UPTEC disguised the fact that it was no longer there, that it was changing the invalidity analysis, and it was no longer advancing the same obviousness analysis or theory that NuVasive, that Medtronic had presented NuVasive. And I would draw reference to red brief at page 58 that out. It illustrates what happened here is Medtronic had proposed unmapping to the claim, and Alphatech had skipped over that and then proposed their new remapping of the limitations. So you end up with two different obviousness theories, the one presented by Medtronic, the different claim mapping presented by Alphatech. And the problem with their remapping is twofold. One, it doesn't comport with this notion that they get the benefit of collateral self-reporting discrimination and obviousness receptor cancer. But second, the
you're breaking up some. Your audio is breaking up.
I hear a lot of background noise, Your Honor, where it's coming from, but
a little closer as you did just now.
Okay. close up. So, you know, I was saying that one of the main problems we have with the application of collateral estoppel in this instance is that, you know, it essentially amounted to, you know, two different obviousness theories being presented, the one by Medtronic and then a change in the invalidity analysis to a remapping of the claims to the art in a different manner once it got to the additional limitations of the dependent claim. But if we look at the and I indicated it, the court may or may not have heard me, this is illustrated in the red brief at page 58. It illustrates the mapping that Medtronic had provided, and then the different invalidity analysis and claim mapping that Alphatech had pivoted to midstream in addressing addressing the dependent claims. So you have this sort of, you know, in these two incompatible claim mapping theories, you know, where Alphatech starts with Medtronic and asks the board to ignore the limitations that were imported from claim one, and then pivots to, you know, a complete different remapping of the prior art to a different obviousness theory, right? And this presents a couple of problems. One, you know, they're arguing that they get the benefit of collateral estoppel for their theory, but they disguise the fact that they're presenting a different mapping, a different obviousness theory. And they also disguise the fact that their different mapping doesn't capture all the claims that are imported into the dependent claim. And we can see that with their change in mapping to implant 1400, right? As illustrated there in page 58 of the red brief, you know, Medtronic had argued that the middle structure 1422 was the claimed first fusion aperture of the independent claim. When Alphatech pivoted their obvious theory, they remapped it, but they remapped their argument to now identify this left lobe 1418 as the first fusion aperture, right? And they had to do this because they couldn't pick up the dependent claims with the original theory. But it ends up disjointing their theory to one that no longer works. And that, again, is illustrated with what they're calling the first fusion aperture. They're pointing to an object that's at a 45-degree angle, and it's not, doesn't meet the limitation imported from claim one, which requires the first fusion aperture to be generally parallel to the longitudinal length of the implant, right? So in ignoring and in urging the board to completely ignore claim one, they disguise what they're doing is changing to a different obvious analysis, and that's a problem. And with that, I would like to make one comment on the marker claim, but I'm happy to save rebuttal because counsel didn't have a chance to address that in their opening.
Just a quick question. The other side, I believe, is saying you can get some additional beneficial information by adding a fourth marker.
I think they advanced that conclusory argument. That was one of their arguments that was rejected by the board. The primary argument that they advanced was pointing to the Bocelli reference and claiming that the Bocelli reference gave you the two markers in the medial plane configuration. The board looked at that, analyzed the scope and content of Bocelli, and they disagreed with that. They told us why. They specifically pointed to paragraph 41 of the Bocelli reference and explained that Bocelli is saying those two spikes 24 that AlphaSec is pointing to are not in the medial plane of the implant. The reference is expressly telling us it has a completely different configuration. It's stating that they're to be disposed on the left and right side of the sagittal midplane of the patient, which is the anatomical reference plane that dissects front to back through the nose. So the board looked at AlphaSec's argument that Bocelli allegedly teaches this configuration and found that Bocelli does not teach the configuration. It instructs different configuration, and that if one were to import that configuration into the implant as proposed, it doesn't give you what's claimed. AlphaSec doesn't grapple with this appeal. They argue the claim construction issue that never addresses the board's key finding that at the end of the day, that the reference just doesn't teach what they said it does. With regard to Fry, you're correct, Your Honor. They argued, hey, you can get some additional information. The board went through and analyzed that argument and said Fry already gives you a marker configuration that gives you everything you need, and it says so in the reference about proper placement and seating in the implant. And AlphaSec's argument about more markers was not only was conclusory, but it was in conflict with the testimony of the experts like Dr. Youssef, who explained why if you start adding additional markers, you're actually starting to destroy the information you can get from an X-ray. The board credited expert testimony, the content of Fry reference, and expert testimony to come to that conclusion that substantial evidence AlphaSec doesn't demonstrate.
Okay, I think we're out of time. Unless my colleagues have questions, not hearing any. Dr. Massera, let's give you 4 minutes to have your rebuttal on the main appeal and to address the cross appeal.
Thank you, Your Honor. And as to the original questions that Your Honor was asking regarding the reply brief, I will submit a letter. We extensively discussed the collateral estoppel for Claim 18 again in the reply brief, and those pages are not all in the appendix, but I will provide that.
I happen to have a copy of your reply right now. Can you just point me to a page?
Sure. So, Your Honor, starts at page one. The first line references this court's prior decision.
I'm talking about the application of collateral estoppel in the context of Claim 18 that recites the additional limitation of a width that is 18 millimeters.
And that starts at page ground one, and that's at page, begins at page 667 of the, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the appendix, page six of the brief.
Right. This is just a broad argument about why estoppel should be applied as to claim one.
Yes, but it specifically references the combination of Fry and Michelson. And that's the issue. That's the issue, Your Honor. If you look at our petition, when we analyze Claim 18, we go straight into the additional limitations of Claim 18, and we don't discuss the limitations of Claim 1. and that's in our petition itself. So when they raised this argument in there, so we argued collateral estoppel, and then in our petition, and we addition, and we went to the additional limitations of Claim 18 in our petition for Claim 18. In their response, they re-raised the argument that the Federal Circuit had rejected in Nuvasive 1. In our reply, we re-raised collateral estoppel, argued that collateral estoppel applies for the entirety of Ground 1, which includes Claim 18, and we also additionally addressed their arguments on the merits, relying again in a consistent manner on this court's precedent in Nuvasive 1.
Okay, do you want to address the cross appeal?
And as to the cross appeal, Your Honor, the so the first point is Medtronic's prior petition that we relied on and Alphatech's petition actually cite to the same embodiment.
Different apertures, though, right?
Actually, not for so one of the embodiments that we cite has only two apertures. And that's figure 55. And that figure was also cited in Medtronic's petition and was relied on.
What about figure 63?
Figure 63,
Medtronic relied on the middle aperture, right? And
yes.
And your theory of unpatentability is pointing to the left-hand aperture and then the right-hand aperture of that middle aperture. Is that
right? Yes, Your Honor, we did point to a different aperture, but the apertures are interchangeable, and there's no material difference between our reading and Medtronic's because the board found that the medial support separates the second aperture.
There's a limitation in Claim 1, though, that requires that the first aperture be in parallel with the longitudinal plane of the device, of the implant.
Yes,
that's more readily recognizable with the middle aperture of figure 63, but it's not quite as recognizable when it comes to the left hand and right hand apertures. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, so no, I don't agree with that to the point that, Your Honor, the claim language is generally parallel, and Alphatech's expert, and this is in the record, provided an opinion regarding Claim 1, and his opinion was that the aperture that we pointed to in Figure 63 is generally parallel. His testimony was that it's not exactly parallel, but it's close. This is at Appendix 6018. And more importantly, the board, in the board's opinion on Claims 6 through 9, expressly cited Dr. Branch's opinion, that's Alphatech's expert, regarding how Claim 1 was met for all of the claims 6 through 9. So for example,
what site is that? What page is that?
So for claim 6, it is at Appendix 37. The board cites Exhibit 1002, that's Alphatech's expert's opinion, and cites a range of paragraphs 127 to 160. And the board explains, this is Dr. Branch's opinion, of how at least Fry and Michelson teachers suggest the limitations of Claim 1. Alphatech's expert analyzed Claim 1 in its entirety because he was not relying on collateral estoppel. He was analyzing the claims as a whole. So he provided those opinions. That's cited again for Claim 7. The board cited at Appendix 40 Dr. Branch's opinion regarding how Claim 1 is met. For Claim 8, that site is Appendix 42, and for Claim 9, that appendix site is 44. So in all cases, the board had actually considered whether Alphatech's mapping met Claim 1 and determined that it had. And more importantly, because the board had decided that in Figure 63, that medial support, which has two portions, separated not only the second fusion aperture from the middle aperture, but also the third aperture, the difference between mapping to the middle aperture and the third aperture doesn't make a difference in terms of separating them from the second fusion aperture. As to the generally parallel, there is record evidence that it is generally parallel. And Nuvasive did not propose any construction of generally parallel that does not that conflicts with Dr. Branch's opinion on generally parallel.
Okay. Thank you. Unless there are other questions. All right. Mr. Rosado, we'll give you a minute to address the cross appeal.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. I would dispute the definition. It's clearly a 45-degree angle is not within the plain meaning of generally parallel. In the testimony that council points to at 6018, I think is the deposition testimony of their expert squirming under this position, where he says that he agrees that it's the 1418 chamber is not exact. He says it's not exactly parallel, but it's perpendicular either. That might be true. It's not perpendicular, but this is not to address something they never addressed. I further draw attention quickly to 259. I was asked about this. There's discussion there where in the commission where they're expressly telling the board how different their challenge to claim 18 is than what was previously presented. Thank you. There's nothing further.
Okay, thank both counsel. The case is submitted.